Carolyn and I are delighted to be with you, and we're thankful for this church body, for your support, your faithfulness, and financially, yes, but also in prayer support. We are grateful for that, and that is so desperately needed. And it has been a crazy year for everybody, so we don't have a corner on craziness anywhere. Although this, as of February, that was my last conference that I spoke at, and so everything got canceled through Friends of Israel and such until September. And so last Sunday I spoke in a church, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday I was at a pastor's conference, had a day in between. We flew out here on Friday, and we're here for the missions conference. We head back home, and I got 3 days to finish a deck project for a customer, and then we head to Montana for a church conference over there. So you're right. Everything, we had nothing, and all of a sudden, it all floods in. So not complaining. We're grateful for the opportunity to have that. And just a brief update before we get going into this. I do have some notes right here. Can we find somebody to make sure everybody has that? They're kind of brief notes, but also a bibliography of books and resources that I recommend regarding our ministry with Friends of Israel and such, and what I'm sharing with you today. You'll see how the bibliography is divided up there in different categories. So if you're interested in that, a couple of things here. As I explained last night, I like to give away money. And I'm going to give some money away right now, if you want it. Who wants free money? Anybody want free money? Yeah. So, this little card out of my table, the display table, says 10% off. Now, most of the resources in that bibliography you can order through Friends of Israel. Not all of them, but many of them you can get through Friends of Israel, FOI.org, and their books bookstore. But you can order anything, get 10% off, and free shipping. So, such a deal. And there's no expiration on this card. All you have to do is include this little discount code in your order. So take that little card, and even if you're not going to use it today, you can go online and use that. So free money. Don't turn it down. We also have our prayer card out there, and also Israel My Glory. We have a few copies left of that. And encourage you to pick up what's left there, and also sign up for a year free of Israel My Glory, as well as sign up for our email prayer update. We'd appreciate if you do that as well. So, as a church ministry representative, you know, I do represent Friends of Israel, but my main ministry is, as we might say, a missionary to the churches, because my role is to teach the biblical truths about Israel and the Jewish people historically, currently, and prophetically in our churches. And there is a very high need to teach about Israel and the Jewish people in our churches today. There is a diminishing emphasis upon Israel in the churches today. And not all of them, of course, but my role then is to come alongside a pastor and kind of reinforce the literal interpretation of the word and encourage you to be praying for Israel and be praying for Jewish ministries. Now, that's my main ministry, is to the churches. Beyond that, secondarily, our ministry is also to Jewish people as God opens doors with Jewish people. And we live right outside of Spokane, Washington, in a town called Cheney. And we moved from Olympia last October. And we moved from an area of a low Jewish population to an area that has a little bit more. I'm getting to know a local rabbi in Spokane, Rabbi Han. He's part of a Chabad congregation there. And learning about Judaism from the inside out. I've taken one of his classes. And so he told me one day, as I was getting ready to leave, and I was getting ready to head to Israel last February, and I said, Rabbi, I'm going to miss the last two classes here. And he says, well, you know, look up so-and-so Rabbi Rehavot and on and on. And he says, you know, Paul, Jews don't always trust you Christians. And he says, you know, history tells us that you guys aren't very trustworthy because of what happened during the Crusades and all of that. So, yeah, he's kind of an odd bird. But I'm getting to know Rabbi Hahn. And the more I get to know him, the more I appreciate him. And he's, you know, obviously a devout Jew. But what he had to say, he did say when he knew that I worked for the Friends of Israel, what my role is, he said, you know, we really do appreciate the support of the Jewish or the Christian community for the Jewish people today. He says, but you know, we don't always trust you Christians because they're afraid of, we have an ulterior motive for befriending them. We want something out of them. We want to control them or whatever. So they're, you know, for people today, Christians, we have to know that Jewish people are hesitant to make friends with a Christian. Because under the banner of the cross, much harm has been done to the Jews through the years. Today, in America, we've got a lot of Christian community that is supportive of Israel and the Jewish people, and they're learning that. It's a slow learn. And in Jewish evangelism, we're finding out that you can't just come up and open up Isaiah 53 with them or John. You know, you have to establish a relationship with them and prove that you love them. Then you gain the right and a hearing in their lives. There's one example of we have a ministry in Las Vegas, and there's about 100,000 Jewish people that live in the Las Vegas area, and a high number of Holocaust survivors. So Friends of Israel has a ministry down there, and one of the couples that moved there, I think like 15 years ago or so, when they moved into town, into Las Vegas, to their field workers. Now, field worker, their primary responsibility is ministry to Jewish people and secondarily to the church, the opposite of a church ministry rep that I am. Anyway, they moved into town, and the first couple they met in their neighborhood were Jewish. And I don't remember the gal's name now. His name was Harold, and I don't remember her name, but she said, oh, you're Christians. I don't want to hear about your Jesus. Don't tell me about Messiah and your Jesus. I don't want to hear it. So for 15 years, Jonathan Kraft didn't preach about the Messiah, but he loved this couple. And he served them and loved them and built a relationship with them. And a couple years ago, on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, her husband went into the hospital. It wasn't an emergency. It was a routine thing. But while he was in the hospital, she called up Jonathan and said, Jonathan, I want to talk to you about Messiah. And that day, she accepted Christ as her Savior. Now, it took 15 years of serving and loving this couple and building that relationship. You know, in Romans, it talks about how the Jews have a blinder on in Romans. And it is difficult for Jewish people to come to faith in Messiah. But when they do, you know, what a change in their life. Obviously, it's a miracle in every one of our lives when we come to faith in Christ. But this is what the Friends of Israel does. We are of a ministry to Jewish people. We are the Friends of Israel gospel ministry, and our goal is to share the good news of Messiah with the Jewish people. And so that comes by way of establishing relationships. And the Friends of Israel also is involved in many humanitarian efforts in Israel to establish that relationship with the country of Israel as well. Some of our funds that we raise money for through the book sales and other things through the gift catalog is to raise money for it's not a ministry, but it's a business called Operation Life Shield. And we raise money for these portable bomb shelters that you can move around. And in Israel, you live with the reality of bombs being launched into your country on a daily basis. And if you're close to the Gaza Strip, that happens on a regular basis. As you know, Sderot is a town right near the Gaza border, and they're constantly getting hit. So the Friends of Israel raises money for these bomb shelters. Also, if you've read in the news, a lot of times in some of these areas, there are incendiary kites and balloons flown into Israel from the Gaza Strip down there, and they want to just torch the land of Israel. Israel has planted trees. Their agriculture is second to none in the world, and that is constantly threatened by fires being set. And so the Friends of Israel has been involved in raising money for firefighting equipment to fight those fires. And there's other areas. The abortion industry in Israel is so high. I think, do you remember the statistic? Was it 1 in 5? Yeah. 1 in 5 pregnancies ends in abortion in Israel. It's a very high number. And so we're also involved in support ministries like that for life. So there are several ways that the Friends of Israel is building bridges in the Jewish community in Israel itself, as well as here in the United States. We are a global ministry. We have ministries, obviously, here in the United States, but in Canada. We have ministries in England, Germany, Poland, France. We have ministries in New Zealand, Australia, South America. And so it's a growing ministry. There are Jewish people scattered all around the world. And much of the scattering came after, in fact, I was just reading this morning that the Sephardic Jews, which are from Spain, ended up here in New Mexico. And did you know in 1885, your first mayor in Albuquerque was Henry Jaffe? He was a Jewish man. And there was a high number of Jewish people that helped settle New Mexico, Sephardic Jews. And they came out here and took advantage of the Santa Fe Trail and business opportunities. And many came over in the 1600s and then again in the 1800s. But now we're finding that many Jews are finding their way back to Israel, called Aliyah. They're returning home. But there's still a good number of Jewish people here in the States and around the world that were scattered as a result of being expelled from countries or anti-Semitism and the Holocaust and such. But many are making their way back home. So that's the ministry of Friends of Israel. Our ministry is traveling through Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Northern California, Montana, and New Mexico. And to minister in the churches what's going on with the Friends of Israel and our ministry that way. So we're glad to be here to update you on that. So this morning what I'd like to do is share with you 2020, what's going on? And if I could answer that completely, I would write a book with what's going on in 2020. What is going to happen? There's so much uncertainty. There's an increased hopelessness. Why, when we look at this, and if you have your Bible, turn to 2 Timothy 3:1-5. In your notes, you're going to see that there are some statistics. I'm not going to touch on all those statistics. I'm just going to make mention of a couple of things in there and then make a point with this before the morning service as well. In 2 Timothy 3:1-5, Paul was writing to a young pastor by the name of Timothy. And in this letter, he's not only giving him instructions in these two letters of, you know, keep on, Timothy, keep on, but also how to organize the church and so on. But he addresses something here as sounds a warning and a word of encouragement, if you will. 2 Timothy 3, starting at verse 1. But realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Let's stop right there. Does this seem to reflect the world in which we live? Sure does, doesn't it? Did you read the latest what's going on in Portland? The new wave of riots against the police. And it just goes on. Seattle, you got Minneapolis. These are just trouble spots in our country that bring this to a head, if you will. And so, whoa, yeah, we see it. They're brutal. They're reckless, malicious. They're without self-control. But there's more than that, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. We have a global pandemic, don't we? I guess. I see that nobody's wearing a mask today. Good for you. Oh, you got one. I've got one somewhere. You know, we don't want to be foolish, but there is a global pandemic. Oh, I see a mask back there. I see it. All right, you got it. It's going on. And, you know, some people have suggested that we are in the last days And this is what the tribulation will be like. And some have said then, well, as a result of that, Trump must be the Antichrist, and on and on. If you go on the internet, which we know is so reliable, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. But we have a global pandemic. We have anarchy, rebellion, chaos, especially in our own country. The wildfires up by in our area, in Oregon and California, my goodness, the fire season has been awful and horrific. I know you've had fires down here as well. Apostasy, we'll talk about that briefly in a moment. But what about this latest peace agreements with Israel? Have you been keeping a pulse on that? We'll talk about that in a moment as well. There's some very incredible things. Now, I don't want to just paint a doom and gloom picture today, but we're looking at a reality and you say, are we in the last days? Wow. It says, in the last days, difficult times will come. Well, I have to say this because, in Paul's day, they thought they were in the last days too. They were under a Roman emperor by the name of Nero. And we ain't seen nothing compared to Nero. And times were difficult for the church that forced them underground into the catacombs and such. There were difficult times then. There's always been difficult times. And right now, it looks like, whoa, all of these things coming. Could this be an indication we're in the last days? Well, it could be. I'm not here to say yes or no. I'm saying could be. Only God does know that. So let's take a look at something real briefly here. And I'm going to allow time at the end for some Q&A. So if this piques some interest in something or a question that I can try to answer. Anyway, the state of Christianity. And Tim Challey's quote is, I think, clear here. The West is becoming increasingly post-Christian. Many of the more progressive nations are not merely overlooking or ignoring their Judeo-Christian heritage, but actively destroying it. They're making their way through laws and constitutions, their definitions and traditions to divest it all of any remnants of the biblical principles and assumptions upon which these nations were built. Now, that's a powerful quote. I have to tell you, though, that I read a quote from a man by the name of Heberg. In 1951, he wrote, he's a former communist turned conservative. And he offers up an analogy that I think is incredible. And it's called the cut flower analogy. He says, so you take a flower that's growing, and it's, of course, connected to the root base or the bulb or whatever, and it gets its life source, and it grows, and it's beautiful. But let's say you want to cut those flowers and take them in the house. That's wonderful. You cut those flowers, you put them in a vase, and you put them on your table. It still looks beautiful for a while. And then after a while, what happens to the flowers in the vase? They start to wither, the stuff falls off, they make a mess on the table, you throw them out. Well, he says, this is what our society is doing. If we look at the root ball or the source of life of a flower, that's like our Judeo-Christian principles that our nation was founded on. And what we're seeing today is a cutting off from that to divest our culture of the very foundational principles upon which our country and other nations were founded upon. And once you cut it off, the flower looks good for a while, and our nation continues for a while, but we're beginning to see when you have a society that says we're cutting off our Judeo-Christian principles. It doesn't mean we were a Christian nation, but we had a principle and moral base and spiritual base, if you will, that people held to, and our founding fathers, some of them not even believers, held to that. But when that gets cut off, we're going to be okay for a while. We'll look okay for a while. But we're beginning to see, I believe, our own society withering because we no longer have an absolute or a moral base in our country. So the cut flower analogy is really what Tim Challies is talking about here. And here's the headlines. You can read them there. But I want to go down to my last point here, talking about the church. Today, what's hip in Christianity, by the way, what's really the new trend, is to deconvert. And there are some big names, musicians and high-level pastors that have gone on the record as saying, we're no longer saved. We are rejecting the evangelical truth of Christianity, and we don't believe it anymore. and we're not Christians anymore. So they're saying, what I believed earlier, I don't believe. I don't even think there's a hell. But one of the things that they are talking about now is rejecting the penal substitutionary death of Christ. That's not true. They said that's a concoction of the church. We're rejecting it. They're rejecting the organized church. And so there is a movement today in a younger generation to do away with the very foundational truths in Christianity and say, we don't believe that anymore. That's a trend in Christianity. In 2 Thessalonians 2, 1-5, now we request you, brethren, with regard to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, that you not be quickly shaken from your composure or be disturbed either by a spirit or a message or a letter as if from us to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called god or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying himself as being God. Do you not remember that while I was still with you, I was telling you these things? Paul was writing to this newfound church, newly established church in Thessalonica. And he'd been teaching them of the coming day of the Lord, but also of the rapture. We're going to talk about it in the morning service, but here he's referring to a coming apostasy that will take place during the tribulation. Not in this age, but a coming apostasy when Antichrist is revealed and he sets himself up as God in the Jewish temple during the tribulation period. So I read that and I say, the reason I give you that background is because Mark Hitchcock, in his book, The Coming Apostasy, says this: as the coming of Christ draws near, and every day we live, we're one day closer to the return of Christ. As the coming of Christ draws near, we should expect the enemy to step up his assault on truth to prepare the world for the final great falling away predicted in 2 Thessalonians 2. So when we look at our world condition, the state of the church today, not every church, but in a general way, we're beginning to see what it's the falling away, or at least the preparation for the final falling away. So I would suggest this. The Lord may not return for 100 years or 1,000 years or maybe 100 days. It might be 100 hours or it might be later. I have to tell you, as we await the return of the Lord, we should be doing so with great anticipation. It could be today. As we sit here, we have 7 children, and child number 5, Corey, was married a couple years ago. She is expecting her first child. It'll be our 3rd grandson. Her first child any moment. Carolyn has her phone at the ready. If it buzzes and she runs out of the room, that's a good thing, because we're anxiously awaiting the news of Corey off to the hospital. We're waiting for that. That's kind of how we should be waiting for the Lord's return, with a sense of expectation. There are no signs that need to take place before the rapture. It could come at any time. But we're seeing in our world today things falling apart and crumbling. And that cut flower analogy seems to fit quite well. But the apostasy, it's not the great apostasy that we're seeing, but it sure looks like our enemy is stepping up and it's in preparation for what is predicted. Now let's take a look at something else. Israel and the Middle East. So we think about this. The normalization of relations between the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and Israel, Joel Rosenberg said, is a game changer. Why is that? Well, every president in recent history has made every attempt to bring the Palestinians to the table and the Israelis to the table to hammer out a peace agreement, two-state solution, one state, whatever. And the Palestinians say, no peace, no negotiations, no state of Israel. They don't want anything to do with it. So the Trump administration, I heard in an interview the other day, said, well, we're going to try something different. In the past, and every president has nobly tried to bring the Palestinians and Israelis together, and hopefully the Arab world will buy into that. Well, they're going around it the other way. They're saying, we're going to work on normalization with Israel, with the Arab nations, and then if we get that done, they will put pressure on the Palestinians. That's the goal out of this. Now, so far we have two, but you have to know that in the Sudan, which has been opposed to Israel in the past, this is what their ministry, foreign ministry spokesman has said. The Emirates' move is a brave and bold step and contributes to putting the Arab world on the right track to build peace in a region and to build sustainable peace. Wow. That's the Sudan. We've heard similar comments from Oman, Saudi Arabia, possibly Lebanon now. You think about what's gone on in Lebanon, and they are ready to sit down at the table and to hammer out an agreement with Israel. You think about these Arab nations surrounding that. The thing that you have to realize that these nations that we're talking about, these Arab countries, Muslim countries, are really in, they have a mutual distrust of Iran. Now, that's a key part of this. We think about what's going on in the world over there. Iran is Shiite Muslim. These Arab nations are primarily Sunnis. And the Sunnis have a longing for peace and are willing to work it out more than the Shiites. Now, Bahrain is a Shiite country, but the ruling family is Sunni. So you've got all of this going on, and it's very intriguing, isn't it? To realize, oh, there's others lining up. And Trump has come out and said there's 4, 5, 6 more countries lining up. Much like when he moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and the prediction was the world's going to be set on fire now because of this, and riots and rebellion. And did you hear of that? Didn't happen, did it? But what's happening? Country, one at a time, is moving their embassy to Jerusalem because that's the capital of Israel. Well, when we look at this, a couple of things. You can expect some negative reactions. Turkey is against it. Iran threatens all of this. But here, in the middle point here, this is quite interesting. Arabs are fed up with the ungrateful Palestinians. They've been pouring all kinds of money into Palestine. And now, in fact, a very interesting quote was from the widow of Yasser Arafat, who was the head of the Palestinian people, right? She is, quote, she lives in Malta, not in Gaza or the West Bank anymore. She lives in Malta, and the widow of Yasser Arafat said, "I'm apologizing to the UAE because the Palestinians are burning your flag. I'm sorry that my people are doing that." She goes, "You know, the Palestinians are fools if they think my husband did not have to work with the Mossad and the IDF when he was alive." And then she went on to say, "They're also fools if they don't realize that my husband kept a diary. I have names, and I can begin to expose the corruption of the Palestinian people." This pressure is now coming on the Palestinians, and it will continue to build. This is exactly what Trump and his administration was aiming for. So I read, and let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. As I've studied 1 Thessalonians, you know, Paul begins, he had at least 3 weeks in Thessalonica. He went from Philippi and got kicked out of there and then moved on to Thessalonica. And there he spent three different Sabbaths, at least, maybe longer there, but at least 3 Sabbaths. And he shared with them. And he made note that these people, over in the first chapter, in the first chapter here, in verse 9, it says, "For they themselves report about us what kind of a reception we had with you and how you turned to God from idols to serve a living and true God and to wait for his Son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, that is Jesus, who rescues us from the wrath to come." So the Thessalonians not only were saved, but Paul had spent a considerable amount of time teaching them about the rapture and the coming of the Lord and then the day of the Lord. So they were pretty well informed. But he would write this letter so they wouldn't be confused, because evidently there was a letter being written to confuse them, that it was supposedly from Paul and all of that. But he wanted to clarify things. And here he clarifies something. 1 Thessalonians 5, "Now as to the times and the epochs, brethren, you have no need of anything to be written to you, for you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord," this is the tribulation period after the rapture, "will come just like a thief in the night, and while they are saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. That's important to know. Paul was telling them there is a day coming when Israel will say, peace and safety. It's not yet. But I wonder right now, in Ezekiel chapter 38, verses 7 through 13, speaks of Israel living securely in unwalled villages. That's a prophetic statement by Ezekiel. Is Israel living securely in unwalled villages today? If you've been to Israel, you say, no. You have seen the wall between Bethlehem and Israel to get in and out of the Gaza Strip or any Arab-controlled land. It's not a friendly thing. When you're in and out of any of the Arab territories, you can't go into the town of Hebron without a risk. Hebron is where the patriarchs are buried, but it's an Arab-controlled place. Is Israel living securely in the land with peace? No. But this says there's coming a day for that. That's what 1 Thessalonians 5 is referring to. And I bring that up because I would suggest to you what's going on in 2020, what's going on with the peace deal of these Arab nations. This isn't the peace deal that the Antichrist is going to sign that we know that Daniel prophesied. But it may be setting the stage for such a deal. It could be that the table is being set. Now, some have suggested Trump must be the Antichrist because all of the peace deals that are going on. Well, I don't know about that. I kind of think not. But I think he could be being used to set the table for a deal. Some have even suggested that the peace deals that are being made in the surrounding countries will result in the Palestinians finally coming on board. Antichrist will come along and confirm such a deal before he breaks it 3.5 years later. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's speculation. It's all speculation for us because we don't know when the Lord's coming back. I'm going to talk about the rapture in the morning service and such, but right now what's going on is important for us to at least consider and think about. I want you to turn to 1 Peter for a moment. We're going to wrap this up. 1 Peter chapter 3. And there's two things I want to remind you of as we look at the times in which we live. 1 Peter chapter 3. The times in which we live are fascinating. And in my view, when we see what's going on in the world stage, as well as the state of the church and such, it seems kind of exciting that we are seeing before our very eyes prophecy unfolding. The very plan, the eternal plan of God is unfolding. It always is, by the way, but it just seems so apparent right now. And maybe so. Now, things could reverse, and I get that, and I'm not predicting that this is the last times. But if it is, we should be thrilled to see these things as believers, because we have a great hope. Now, look at this. In 1 Peter 3, verse 15, we're reminded by Peter here, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. We live in a day where anxiety is climbing. Not just because of the global pandemic, but the anarchy and the chaos in our world today. And we see what's going on governmentally in our own country with an election coming up. And now you add to that in the mix the pick for the Supreme Court. We know we're in for an ugly battle there, right? You see all of this. It's troubling to people. And if you don't have the Lord, where is your hope? The truth is, if your hope is in government, how's that working for you? If your hope is in armies and peace deals, how's that working for you? If your hope is in medicine and technology, how's that working for you? You know, the truth is, people who put their hopes in things here find themselves hopeless because this will not satisfy in this life. But you have a message of hope. So set the Lord apart in your heart in this way, so that those who live in this world sense hope in you, and you will be ready to give an answer for the hope that you have in Christ. You see, we're reminded that our time here is very brief. We are aliens. We're just on our way to heaven. Are you ready to give an answer? You know, a missions conference reminds us, every believer of all ages, this isn't just for senior saints or middle-aged people or young people. This is for everybody to be ready with the Word of God and to be convinced in your heart of your hope to be ready to share that. One other text is from Acts chapter 17. And I love this text. We know that on Paul's missionary journey, Acts chapter 17, Paul had been to Thessalonica. He had gone on to Berea. Finally, he made his way to Athens. And at Athens, he comes to an altar to an unknown God. And the Apostle Paul makes the most of this opportunity. We pick up the dialogue here in Acts chapter 17, verse 24. He makes the most of this. He sees this altar to an unknown God, and he says, "The God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of all heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation and mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. In him we live and move and exist or have our being." I read that text to you because I've been reminded, and as I referred last night, I survived a heart attack just a year ago. And through the wonderful provisions of the sovereignty and the providence of God, I am alive today. And there are so many ways that we were reminded that God, who is the author of life, who created man, puts man at certain places in history for a purpose to know him. You and I have been placed in this country, in this state, right now, at this point in history. The boundaries we live in and the time in which we live in is exactly where God wants us. He didn't have you be born 100 years ago or 500 years ago. He put you here now. Why? So that you would seek after God and know him. And in knowing him, we have this incredible accountability and stewardship to make him known to this world. You are alive today, right now. You're getting to observe some incredible things going on the world stage. Isn't that, should be, I mean, it's, okay, fun in a way. Not fun, ha ha ha, but fun like, wow, what is God doing? Yes, this is what God's doing. And we are ambassadors for Christ with a message of reconciliation for those who are enemies of God to be reconciled to God. We have the message of the gospel of God's grace, the message of hope. And I hope to build on that a little bit in the morning service as we talk about the blessed hope of the believer and the rapture. But let me open this up. We have a few minutes. Do you have any questions about the ministry, Friends of Israel, our ministry, if we can update you on anything? This is the opportunity to ask, and if I don't know it, Carolyn can answer it for me. So, anybody have a question for me about our ministry or what's going on, even in the world today? And I'll do my best to explain some of that. So, questions from you. Yes?
Is your ministry primarily going to churches and trying to develop a Jewish ministry within churches? Or is it different than that?
Well, that would be a fair assessment of it. Yes, it is to teach in the churches the truths about Israel and the Jewish people biblically so that people would know that Israel wasn't just God's chosen people with Abraham, but they continue to be God's chosen people to this very day. And God, Israel is kind of like the centerpiece on a table. if you will, that God's the author of. And if you have a good understanding, literally, of Israel today and for the future, the rest of prophecy kind of falls in place when we understand Israel. Israel today, I will tell you, is not a repentant nation. They are a secular country, very atheistic. They are gathered, like last night we talked about from Ezekiel, the valley of dry bones and the bones rattling and coming together. This is what we have observed. We believe this is what we've observed, Israel coming back together. But they are gathered today in unbelief. Now, it's important to know, and this is more than answering your question, but it's important to know. People say, what's the big deal that Israel's back in the land? Some would say today, they have no right to the land because they're not repentant. Well, they're not repentant, but according to the fulfillment of prophecy, who is Antichrist going to make a covenant with if it's not a gathered nation? Logic tells you it has to be a group of people gathered for him to make a covenant with. Secondly, we know there's going to be a temple built during the tribulation because Daniel said there will be an abomination of desolation. And then he foretells in Daniel chapter 9 that Antichrist will desecrate that temple. That's repeated when Paul's words to the Thessalonians, and Jesus himself, as he was teaching the Jewish people about the tribulation period in Matthew 24 and 25, he refers to the desecrating of the temple as well. There's going to be a third temple in Jerusalem that the Jews built. Now, where it's going to be built is the big argument, but today they are shovel ready. They are, if you go to the Temple Institute in Israel today, you can visit it, and you can see they've got all of the priestly garb. They have all the utensils. Everything is ready for the temple. They have all the blueprints. Everything is ready. But one problem, it needs to be on the Temple Mount. That's a minor sticking point. However, Ron Rhodes, some of his books, I've got them in my bibliography, he has a view of what's going to take place. He believes Ezekiel's war will take place after the tribulation, and Islam will be neutralized after the rapture, and before the real tribulation period begins, Ezekiel's war, Islam will pretty much be wiped out and neutralized, so the Jews will be able to build their temple. That's a speculative view. That is one thought. Might be good. Other thing is, you know, right now, underneath the Temple Mount, the Muslims have been digging under the Temple Mount to remove anything that has, I mean, there's artifacts under there from the Temple period, and they're trying to get rid of it. What happens when you honeycomb underneath the earth? Enough. Oh, maybe an earthquake, and everything collapses. That's a possibility. Or maybe what we're going to find is all of these peace agreements that's going on. What if we see an agreement that they can build their temple on that place? That would be really fascinating. Here's my point. Israel is a key player in the prophetic message of God's eternal plan. They are God's chosen people. The Abrahamic covenant is still in effect, and it will be fulfilled. That's my message as I travel around the churches is to remind God's people of the chosen people, the Jewish people, and God's plan for them. That's a long answer to your short question. Anybody else? Yes. They do. They have a ministry. Mitch Treisman is one of our missionaries, and he is active in New York City. But do know that, obviously, we're not the only Jewish ministry around. There are chosen people, there's Jews for Jesus, and others, Friends of Zion. These are also ministries that are active in reaching out to Jewish people with the gospel. And we're one of many, but we do have a ministry in New York City. Something interesting to think about with ministries to Jewish people. And by the way, if God is laying on anybody's heart here a desire for Jewish ministry at all, come talk to us, because there are opportunities opening up. Let me give you one. Down in New Zealand, we have a growing ministry. It got cut short because of COVID this year, But we have a missionary living in New Zealand. And what he does, he's opening up a new ministry because when soldiers get out of the IDF, they have to serve their minimum of 2 years. Many of them in the IDF, they are searching young adults. And they are exploring all kinds of options outside of Judaism. They're looking at Buddhism, Hinduism, they're looking at Islam. They're looking at a number of things. But they get a chance then to travel the world. And they want to travel around. And one of the things that we're finding is some in their travels, they love this backpacking and hiking in the mountains. And so we have a ministry in New Zealand that targets that. They advertise it in Israel as a place to come and stay so that you can go on your backpack trips and everything. So it's like a home base or a base camp, if you will, they've established. They can stay there for free. And guess what? The door opens up for these Jewish young adults say, why are you doing this? And our people are saying, because we love the Jewish people, and let us tell you why. Those opportunities are growing around the world as these young adults travel and are looking for answers that they're not finding in Judaism. In fact, right now we are living in an unprecedented time that more Jewish people are coming to Christ ever before per capita than any time in history around the world, not just in Israel. There are 14 million Jewish people living in the world today. 6.6 of them live in Israel. And for the first time in history, there are more Jews living in Israel than in other places around the world. There's Aliyah happening, and they're going back. And so ministries are concentrating on Israel. But you can't be a missionary in Israel. That's against the law. You can't do that. Now, if you're Jewish and you're living there, you're involved in ministry, but I can't be a missionary to Israel. That is illegal. You can have ministries there, but under different auspices. So there's ministries around the world going on. In New York and cities, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, major cities, you'll find high concentrations of Jewish, high population of Jewish people in a lot of the major cities. And that's where we also have ministries. So, yes? Is Netanyahu doing anything? He's fighting for his political life. Right now, you know, you need to pray for Benjamin Netanyahu. As you pray for the peace of Jerusalem, pray for that man. Not only is he a very intelligent man, he's a statesman, but he is under fire, just like our own president, and there are forces trying to get him out. However, he is also part of the architect of these peace deals that Trump is brokering as well. But he's got a lot of people there, you know, they're slinging mud about scandals and all of that. But pray for that man. I know he has studied the scriptures. He has been involved in Bible studies of the Old Testament for sure. He's read the prophets. He has heard of these things, and I think we need to be praying for his salvation. Please pray for Benjamin Netanyahu that the Spirit of God would get a hold of his heart and that he would come under the conviction of the Spirit and he would come to faith in his true Messiah. Pray for that man. But he's busy today, and he's trying to hold a government together. He and Benny Gantz, they used to be great friends. He and Benny now have worked out an agreement that Netanyahu is going to step aside as prime minister in about a year now and let Benny Gantz take over. That's the only way they could form a coalition government, and it's a little rocky because they're not getting along too well. But yes, he is very active, but under fire and really having to spend an awful lot of time defending himself. So, anybody else? Yeah?
If Biden happens to get in, what do you see happening with the peace deals?
So, if Biden wins this election, I see that it seems that there's enough momentum being carried on by these Arab nations themselves, that I think we might see that continue. There might be. Trump would tell you, and the government has said, they're not really part of the peace deal. What Trump signs is, I'm acknowledging you guys have gotten together and worked this out. And so the United States really becomes a third-party observer, if you will, So I think it's a possibility, if Biden wins, that some of this will carry on. But then again, maybe it won't, because Biden and Obama were part of the Iranian deal that was such a bad deal for Israel. Don't know. We could really speculate about some other things. But I think one possibility is those peace deals might continue on independently of Joe Biden. But if he was smart, he would continue it. So I don't know. That's a very good question. And I don't know how to answer it other than my speculation with it. But yeah. Anybody else? I appreciate it. Listen, if you have more questions, and if you have an interest in Jewish ministries and you want to ask questions about that, we can put you in touch with people. If you're interested in pursuing that on a short-term or long-term basis, or if you know of somebody that is, we would love to talk with you about that. So I'm looking forward to the next hour, looking at the rapture and the blessed hope of the believer. And I thank you for having us here as part of this conference. Thank you.